What is going on, everybody? Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of The Rational Revolution. With me, Mark Becker, I'm so glad you're here today, however you're listening to it, whether it's on Saturdays, Sundays, or on our app, which you can download and listen to all of our previous episodes at the Civic Media app. Our shows, along with everybody else's, ours is the best, clearly. But hey, you know, we're not biased at all. I wanted to just start with a moment of gratitude. You know, we record is the secret of, as Shooter McGavin says, secret of the pros. We record this the show a little bit ahead of time, and I was driving into work today because I have a real job, and I had the windows down, and the sun was shining, and it was a beautiful 74 degrees on its way up to the lower to mid 80s, nice and warm. And I was sitting there with my son in the car, and we just kind of had a moment where it was a moment of gratitude. And it just to take a second to think, no matter where you are in life, no matter what you're doing, what a beautiful thing it is just to be alive. You know, whoever you got to thank, if it's a big guy up above, or if it's your parents, or if it's your friends, it's such an incredible thing to just take a moment and sit back and appreciate just the simple joy of seeing what you can see, smelling what you can smell, tasting what you can taste, and loving who you love. And so what a joy and a privilege it is just to be alive. And it's even more of a joy and a privilege to speak with you every week. So thank you, guys. I hope everything is going well with all of you. And and thank you again for tuning in. This week, my goodness, we have my dear friend, my friend and yours, Carlton Huffman is back, baby. Carlton, what is going on, sir?
Well, first off, I definitely want to echo that spirit of gratitude right there. We got Father's Day weekend coming up.
Yes.
And, just can't say enough of how blessed I am in that department, and just want to wish that to everybody out there. Also, on a note of gratitude, I'm grateful I do not have 34 felony convictions and had to meet with my parole officer this week. So I will just say that is my spirit of gratitude.
Right? Oh, yes, right. You know, yeah, no, 34 felonies. Later, yeah, I think, yeah, that's in meeting with your isn't that a thing? The Republican nominee for president of the United States has a PO officer, isn't that wild?
And the fact that you saw the Republican position on felony or felons being able to vote,
yes,
almost flipped overnight whenever,
yes,
that happened right there, which is an amazing thing how that happened.
Mm-hmm. Like so many things on the right at this time we're living in. The positions flop dramatically only when it affects them directly. It's great.
and it just goes to show, like, situational ethics has infected our politics, which is a deplorable state of things. But,
yeah.
I mean, we, I think, can say, for those of us who maintain those principles, even at the expense of some of the relationships in our party, I mean, it's not for us to feel good about ourselves. It's just being true to who we are, and I just wish that and hope that the Republican Party can get back to that. But I know we know that's not going to happen anytime soon with this election, especially since we're going to have a coronation of Trump coming up in Milwaukee, just
in Wisconsin. Yes,
is it just 4 short days after he gets sentenced by the judge and will officially, in every way, wear the moniker of criminal and convicted felon?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Isn't that? Well, and yeah, I don't know how that's just going to be wild. And then it was just announced, what was it, yesterday or 2 days ago, that participants and attendees to the RNC convention will be able to carry their firearms. So it's like, that's cool, you know. How about the Secret Service is like, you've got to be freaking kidding me.
Well, I mean, we heard from the January 6th committee that there were arms present in the crowd that day, which went against the moniker that it was a mostly peaceful protest.
Mostly
that,
peaceful.
We keep hearing from people,
mm-hmm,
that everybody tries to downplay. But it just it is an amazing time to behold that we look back 8 years ago, whenever Trump was first nominated, and you saw so many people who were reluctant. We remember Speaker Ryan at the time was very reluctant to endorse. You had Ted Cruz still holding out, even whenever he was speaking at the RNC convention. And then literally within hours of a felony conviction, you see the party just rallying around Trump without hesitation. And we used to live in a time where the Republican Party still had that nagging conscience, but it is the product of 8 years of going all in with this individual that has warped what we feel about issues, how we see the world, how we see our former adversaries like Russia.
Yeah.
And in terms, we just see the world completely differently. And these are the same people that within 8 years, these are the same people that have a 180 view looked at the world. And yet we're the ones who supposedly have TDS, that because we have Trump derangement syndrome, we are the crazy ones. And this is just me sitting there saying, no, we're not.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope that as we get into the course of the conversation, that we can just talk about how this happened, what caused us to get here. And I mean, each of us has our own different experiences. You as a former county party chairman, me as a political operative in the belly of the beast of Republican campaign world. And once again, we just have to look back and see that this is the price that happens whenever you make a Faustian bargain for power. And we're all living with the consequences of it as a country.
Yeah, we talked with Carlton Huffman, GOP operative. And it's interesting, you know, we were talking earlier, we touched on, you know, the GOP believes in their opinions shift and everything, like when it affects them personally. And I think a very big time in the shift of my opinions and beliefs and stuff like that. And I mean, to be clear, I'm not a registered Democrat, but I certainly am not a Republican. But when I was elected into the county board, you know, and I got elected by saying, oh God, taxes are this, the 0.5% sales tax is that, and, you know, hold the line on all this stuff. And I mean, I believe in spending, you know, within me, our reason, but the opinions that I had on waste, fraud, and abuse and all of these things, it changed so dramatically when I opened my eyes to the need that was in the community. And, you know, I think the GOP, for so many things, they live in the world of buzzwords and, you know, 5-second sound bites. And so there is just an inherent inability to really see outside of themselves. And it's so difficult for someone to say, okay, yes, you know, college debt is a problem. Yes, you should pay back your debts. Yes, but there are some instances where it's like, okay, there were predatory institutions and that took advantage of people, knowing full damn well they weren't going to get anything from their education. And you look at marriage equality, and, you know, to treat someone like a human, we should accept, here is, it's Pride Month, we should accept the fact that people love who they love and allow that to happen, and accept that that marriage at its core, which is, this is true, was not a religious institution. It was not. When marriage started, it was not a religious thing. So when we live in the world of sound bites, we can't get past that to open people's field of vision.
Absolutely. And I would just point back to some of the other iconic Republican presidents just to show how different it was in terms of how they approach the world versus what we live in the world of today. When you had Dwight Eisenhower and he was swept into power, he did not want to wipe away the New Deal because he knew that those programs helped people and that to just tear them asunder for ideological reasons would have dramatic repercussions for the country. Ronald Reagan, my favorite president of the modern era, he was willing to raise taxes to combat the deficit. And he made decisions that were based on reality, even to the point that while people like idolize him today, he was considered not conservative enough because he took pragmatic solutions when it came to approaching the Soviet Union and also dealing with the border that we are still dealing with today. And you had George H.W. Bush, who whenever, I mean, he made a campaign promise, and whenever he saw that the math was not going to work, he basically told the American people, look, I made a promise that I am unfortunately able to keep. He did not let ideology hold him hostage to what practical governance demanded. But now we have a time where with Trump, he figured out very early as he was getting into politics that if you say those 30-second sound bites and then govern in those 30-second sound bites, you're going to feed what has basically become an addiction to dopamine hits, to own the libs, and to have simplistic solutions that feel good in the moment but have dramatic consequences for both everyday life for individuals within this country and probably at the highest level, dangerous consequences for what we're dealing with around the world.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's kind of a crazy place to be, you know, because when I first kind of experienced some of that, it was Ted Cruz's famous speech that wasn't, you know, he did that, I don't know how long it
the
was,
filibuster. 12,
his 12 hour filibuster that like actually didn't do anything and didn't have any impact on anything whatsoever other than to get him on TV. And yeah, it was that moment where it's like, what the hell is he doing? Like, oh my God. And then that was the moment where I think he thought, oh, I can run for president off the back of that. I am standing for, like, oh my God, dude. You know, it's wild that this is how that party is governing on the national scale.
And I consider and say firsthand, I was a staffer on Capitol Hill
back
in 2013 at the same time that Ted Cruz gave that speech. And one of the most constant things that we would get from voters, and that's the thing that we have to get, it's not just the fact that there is rot at the top. It is because there is an ecosystem that started with talk radio, expanded with the advent of Fox News, and now that we see with Newsmax and in the modern era, these podcasts that Steve Bannon, Candace Owens, and those folks put out there, that they get, that the voters want just pure fight all the time.
Right on. Here we're talking with... We're talking with Carlton Huffman. We're going to continue this discussion on the other end. Be right back. What's up? Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. I am Mark Becker, your host. We're talking with the dear friend Carlton Huffman, GOP operative extraordinaire. We were talking about the evils of talk radio, and I can proudly say I am not part of the problem, but I think it's overlooked a little bit. Or maybe it's not, I guess, you know, with people that kind of study this stuff. It was a lot of, you know, Rush Limbaugh and the Fairness Doctrine and all that kind of stuff that kind of, you know, started a lot of this muck, I guess, you know, I'm out of it. Has anyone taken over that Rush Limbaugh, you know?
I would sit there and say, I will give the man his due. He was a very unique entertainer and talent, and he made what was seemingly sinister entertaining for a large host of people, and nobody's been able to quite fill that gap,
right.
But it's one of those things, like, you have the devil you know, but then there's the devil you don't know, and that's where we alluded to earlier, people like Candace Owens, Charlie Kirk, Steve Bannon, and the thing is with Rush and others back in the day, they were able, even if you disagreed with them at a fundamental level, they could make things seem seemingly unsinister and palatable to a large mainstream audience. Whereas you have Steve Bannon today, weeks before he has to report to jail, basically saying that he wants to jail people, he wants to jail Trump's political opponents, and that they are going to basically weaponize the federal government to go after the opposition in this country.
Right. Now, I want to talk about that later in the show, because I do have something that I want to get to. But I also want to talk about what you have been up to. I saw a picture, you know, a couple days ago, and it was a smiling Carlton Huffman standing shoulder to shoulder with Nancy Mace, representative from the beautiful state of North Carolina. Like, and I was like, is this old? Is this? And then I texted you. I was like, are you, what? What's happening? What have you been up to?
It's one of those things that obviously with the political limelight, I've done my best to just try and keep, be more of an observer and a commentator on things. But Congresswoman Mace, she's a personal friend. I've known her before politics, and it was just one of those things that she, whether you like him or you don't, I'm personally on the don't like side. Kevin McCarthy, she was one of the group that voted to boot him, and he was one of those who, in the Republican Party, who thought that you could join forces hand in hand with Trump, even though you know better, and try and dance with that devil. Yeah. And he never really truly believed in anything, and he was a consummate liar. Liz Cheney put it in her book very well, that she had a conversation with Jim Jordan within 5 minutes of both of them talking to Kevin McCarthy, and they both had two very different stories of what Kevin McCarthy had told them. Yeah. And Nancy, as the first female graduate of the Citadel, the military academy there in Charleston, South Carolina, she's tough as nails, and she was willing to take the political risk of voting against the speaker of her own party. And Kevin McCarthy became the only speaker of the House to ever get voted out in the middle of his term. And they came back at her with seeking revenge, and she was able to win a landslide primary reelection on Tuesday. And it's just one of those things that, even though I definitely have differences of opinion on things with Trump, there are friends that I have been there for them, and they have been there for me through some of the crazy challenges I've had to deal with. And so when a friend calls, you go to help them. And it was just very nice to see her be victorious on Tuesday night.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think that goes to a lot of what this show at its core is about. You know, you can have differences of opinions on things, but it doesn't necessarily change the core of the person. You know, I don't know Nancy Mace. I'd love to talk to her. She has an incredibly impressive resume. And, you know, although I disagree with her opinions on some things, she does seem like a person who, because she's gone against her party on some things as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, she is a distillation of what I think the Republican Party had an opportunity to pivot to in the aftermath of the 2012 election when Mitt Romney lost, that there was a chance to be fiscally conservative, socially sensible. That doesn't mean that you necessarily turn your back on principles like being pro-life, but I think anybody who's pro-life can agree that we don't want a woman denied medical care to the point that she almost bleeds to death, as we've seen happen with some of these abortion laws. And Nancy, to her credit, is one of those Republicans who applies common sense. And at one point, she was on the opposite side of Trump. Trump endorsed against her 2 years ago, and she was able to win that primary then too. So the Republican Party, it's one of those things that if they are victorious this November, we're all in for a crazy 4, if not more years. If Trump is unsuccessful, and that might be the one thing that can help break this the spell, if he is unsuccessful for 2 elections in a row. But we are in for a bumpy ride, unfortunately. And I try to be an optimist with people like Nancy and others in the Republican Party that can lead us out of this mess. But for the moment, I think that as listeners of this show know all too well, if a felony conviction can't do it, if a riot at the Capitol on January 6th can't do it, if 2 impeachments can't do it, and however many other indictments that he's facing can't do it, it's going to take the voters at the ballot box to be able to put the final kibosh on this thing.
Yeah, and here we're talking with Carlton Huffman, GOP extraordinaire. Now, with everything that you've gone through, and the last time you were on the show, we made some waves with some of the stuff, but you can feel free to download those episodes. They're definitely worth a listen. Are you getting back into politics? Are you trying to, or are you just, whatever, if this is a friend, I'll help. What did you do for Congresswoman Mace?
As a friend calling me in, it's one thing that I've definitely been trying to be selective about getting involved, because there's certain things in this party, in the Republican Party right now, that it's hard to be honest and outspoken about Trump without facing a lot of consequences. And definitely with the waves that we made regarding the story involving Andrew Iverson and the as executive director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, that definitely got some local notice. Dealing with some of that right now at this point. it is telling that the state party has decided to stand by him, with him in that position of authority, with basically trying to pass the buck onto me and saying that the whistleblower is to blame on this one, which is something that they're going to have to live with in terms of the coverage of the convention and potentially with the reaction of voters in Milwaukee come November. But for me, it is something that where there are friends or good Republicans, like, say, Brian Kemp in Georgia, where there's an opportunity to be involved with folks like that, I'm more than happy to lend my hands to the effort. But it's not something that I'm doing full time right now.
No, that's cool. We got 30 seconds left here. And so really super quick, Kevin McCarthy, he endorsed her opponent? Is he trying to pull strings in the background here?
Oh, he's trying to weasel his way to be Trump's chief of staff, which is goes to show you just how pathetic of an individual he is, that he can get voted out and still think that he is going to be able to weasel his way back into things. But the voters in South Carolina had something to say about that on Tuesday,
I imagine they will going
forward.
Sounds good here on the Rational Revolution with Mark Becker. See you on the other side. We're back, Rational Revolution, with me, Mark Becker, and my dear friend, Carlton Huffman, and he is a GOP operative extraordinaire, and we were talking about, the next 4 years, if Republicans do win, either way, I think we're in for a roller coaster, but if they would win, I was thinking today, as I kind of prepared for the show, what, objectively, what have the Republicans done in, good faith that's good for the government, that's good for the people? Because, I look at the signature issue of this campaign that they're trying to create is the border. And President Biden has put forth some of the strongest border security bills in the history of the country. And the Republicans, time after time after time, have voted it down because of the validity of what it does, but simply because they don't want to give Joe Biden a win into November. And so, they're saying, oh, he never did anything on the border, didn't do anything on the border, didn't do anything. And I mean, he didn't up until, 6-9 months ago. But now that he's doing it, they don't care. And then I look at some things I read an article, Ron DeSantis had a bill in Florida that bans meat grown in a lab. And so I started reading the article and I was like, okay, well, that kind of makes sense. And listening to some of the experts and the FDA and the warnings against, lab grown foods, because foods with chemicals is a huge issue. It's bad. It's bad for your health. And I'm like, okay, well, hey, this seems to be a good thing. But then I read a quote that he says that's like this. And he said, Today, Florida is fighting back against the global elite's plan to force the world to eat meat in a petri dish or bugs to achieve their authoritarian goals. I wanted to smash my head against a brick wall like 500 times, because it's like, even when you do something, even when there's something that is like good, the Republicans cannot get out of their own way to global elite or cabal or deep state this to death, just to, and I don't know for what purpose, but they can't get out of their own way, even when they do something that is really genuinely a good thing. Why? What is that?
Well, I can tell you that Rick Perlstein is an author that I admire very greatly. He has done a whole series of books about the rise of the modern American right. And it's one thing that I don't want to come off as like snobbish or just painting people with a too broad a brush, but there is a paranoid streak within American politics. But we saw it with Joe McCarthy with the Red Scare back in the 1950s. We saw it in many ways with Barry Goldwater's campaign that opposed the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Yep. And always, I mean, the John Birch Society and others. Basically, it used to be looking for a communist under every bed, but now basically it substitute Antifa, substitute Black Lives Matter, anything and everything out there. There is a constituency within the Republican Party that takes things to the extreme in terms of extrapolating what it's going to mean. We remember when Sarah Palin said that Obamacare was going to lead to death panels. And while while I'm not a fan of the Affordable Care Act in terms of how it raised prices within the healthcare system, we obviously see there have been some empirical benefits to it. And at the same time, the worst scary moments that we were told were certain to happen if they passed Obamacare into law. Here we are 12 years later, and we're still not witnessing or experiencing those things. I would say, too, when it comes to the border, I will say that I think the Biden administration, they had some good intent at the very beginning to try and move away from some of the worst aspects of Trump's policy, but the law of unintended consequences and the fact, too, people like to downplay the American economy right now. You don't have tens of millions of people wanting to come to this country if the economy is a hellhole, the way that they have been trying to put that out there. And we just look at that and sit there and say, okay, which part is true? Joe Biden has wrecked the American economy, or that and that we are living in a hellscape where the living envy the dead, or do we live in the greatest economy that we've got out there in the rest of the world, where we once again are leading, but people do not want to acknowledge that because of politics? And the only thing that I can really point to within the last few 2 years that the Republican Party has done was to get on board and actually do what President Biden wanted to do, which was fund Ukraine. Right at the point that the Ukrainians were on the brink of collapse. Finally, I will give Mike Johnson this. He did release the bill and put it on the floor. And thankfully, we are seeing the results on the battlefield. Yeah. But for 6 months, the Republicans let the politics within their base basically withhold arms from Ukraine. And a lot of Ukrainians died as a result of that. And that is just that is what happens when you put domestic politics and what talking heads are saying on Fox News and Newsmax ahead of what good policy is.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things I was thinking about, too, and how frustrating it is in our politics right now, especially on the right, you know, from the statement I read about from, you know, Ron DeSantis about the deep state and cabals, and it everything is about a conspiracy. But the crazy thing is, and I remember when I was chairman, you know, people saying deep state as a buzzword, but not actually like knowing what it meant. And, you know, and what I thought, okay, deep state is what that is like people with a political agenda being in places where a political agenda is not supposed to be, right? FBI, CIA, blah, 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 whatever. But then I remember, like, you know, now there was a recording of Justice Alito outwardly touting that the country needs to get back to godliness and some stuff like that. And the GOP celebrates it. And then I also remember, and I think you were here, where as a Brown County Republican Party chair, I had a event, and we hosted one with Pat Rogensack when she was running for Supreme Court. And what there was media there and everything, but then what their campaign wanted us to do, and we did, we kicked everybody out of media, out of the hall, shut the doors. We had like guards. We hired guards to be outside of the door, shut the doors. And then Pat Rogensack went on stage and talked for 20 minutes, 30 minutes about all these hyper-partisan stuff, you know, standing up for the unborn, hyper-conservative things that would like just foam Republicans at the mouth. And it's like, okay, so we talk about deep state. What the deep state is putting people in place in those positions. What the GOP is trying to do is, in essence, they're trying to create their own deep state, whether it's, you know, putting people in the CIA, completely gutting federal agencies and putting, you know, a litmus test for Trump people in, and they don't care.
Everything is projection in so many ways whenever it comes to that. And I would sit there and say that if your listeners are not familiar with Project 2025,
oh my
they
God.
Need to be
yeah.
aware of it.
Yeah.
Because basically,
well,
what
talk
they,
about
what
it.
They are
yeah, talk
do,
about
they,
that.
Yeah, there is an administration in waiting that has been basically there since Trump left the White House in January of 2021. And these are not your people who, like your Jim Mattises of the world, your H.R. McMasters of the world, your Chief of Staff John Kelly's of
Tillerson's.
The world. The people who were willing to tell Trump no to his face or willing to sit there and work around the worst aspects of policy that he was trying to put into place. These are people who are true MAGA believers. These are people like Akash Patel. Imagine him running the CIA.
Yeah.
It would be like J. Edgar Hoover all over again, using the resources of the federal government to investigate and intimidate political opposition. You have the administration wanting to reframe the way that federal workers are hired and protected, and basically wanting to go back to the spoil system where you only put political allies, regardless of competence or know-how when it comes to working in the federal government, and only put in the people that the next time Trump says he wants something done, he expects to be saluted and go out and execute. And we're talking people like Rick Grenell, who is former ambassador to Germany, who was a big part of the Stop the Steal movement.
Yeah.
You could see, fresh out of prison, whenever he serves his 4-month sentence, you could see Steve Bannon back in the White House.
Yep.
And these are people who are saying it out loud today. They want to jail their political opponent.
Yeah.
Whatever people might think of what Richard Nixon did with Watergate, that is child's play compared to what this administration would want to do with Project 2025. And I encourage your listeners to Google it, research it, know that this is going to be a reality should Donald Trump be reelected in November.
Okay, so walking down that road, what if that happens, what are the checks and balances in place for like the whole jailing your political opponents thing? So like, well, how do you stop that?
I hate to say this will be, once again, I think I said this the last time on the show, as bad as I thought the first Trump administration was going to be, it ended up being worse. Uh-huh. And so I typically try to adapt to the worst case scenario, just to hopefully be surprised whenever things go a little bit better than what I anticipated.
Yeah.
Right now, the one institution that held at the end of the Trump administration was the court system.
Yeah.
Even though it was a Republican Supreme Court, they dismissed the challenges to the integrity of the election brought up by the Trump campaign. And even Trump-appointed judges did their best to go in and apply the Constitution correctly in terms of the outcome of the election. Those are people are going to be basically the only ones really standing in the way, because we've seen the Republican members of Congress that have gone along. So the legislative branch being a check is only going to be a realistic scenario if the Democrats take control of the House of Representatives or somehow maintain control of the Senate, which is doubtful given the math that we're dealing with this November. You basically are having to hope for the courts, and you can rest assured if Republicans take united control of Congress, they're going to try and put in judges that not just are seen as Federalist Society appointees. These are people who are probably going to be questioned. Are you going to give President Trump what he needs to do? So I would just sit there and say that's how serious people need to take this in terms of the courts are basically the last thing that is going to stand in place as a guardrail to the worst instincts of what the Trump administration 2.0 would try to do.
Right. And I think, you know, and I think you and I disagree a little bit on the ruling of, you know, striking down Roe. But if you look at that, you know, it's not it. The courts will say one thing as the justices did when they were questioned about, you know, will you overturn? And they, oh no, it's, you know, stare decisis. It's already been decided. But, and then when it actually came up to them, they did the opposite of what they said they were going to do.
Yeah. And I will sit there and say, I mean, yes, someone who is personally pro-life, I mean, I thought what Ruth Bader Ginsburg thought, that Roe was wrongly decided, but I still have a common sense belief that you don't let women bleed out
right.
being denied medical care because of your belief in the pro-life system. I also believe that whenever we look at what happened at the end of 2020, it was only one minor case that the Trump campaign won in court, and then 60 other decisions, the federal judiciary held the line against what Trump tried to do. But
right.
once again, if he were to get back in there, you could potentially see judges that are appointed not with the mindset of whether they are faithful to the Constitution, but whether or not they are faithful to the unitary executive theory, which means the president can do whatever he wants without consequence.
Yeah, and
which is what the Trump campaign has argued before the Supreme Court about qualified immunity.
And I think it's so, you know, there's a lot. If you think about it, in 2020, it was so much easier for those judges that were appointed at the federal level to rule against him when he is a sitting but outgoing president, defeated, than it would be to rule against and to try to keep the checks and balances of a current president, you know, sitting in office for the next 4 years. That would be a much more daunting thing. We're talking to Carlton Huffman here on The Rational Revolution. We're going to talk about what is the state of play in political races in Wisconsin on the other side. We'll see you in a little bit.
We all want to change the world. Tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. All right. All right.
All Welcome back. Right. You got The Rational Revolution here on Civic Media. I'm your host, Mark Becker. We are talking with dear friend and GOP operative Carlton Huffman. And I kind of want to just give a state of play for everyone because, you know, if you're listening to this show, you are obviously in the top 10% of IQ of, you know, in the world, clearly. But I think there's some... as our producer's laughing at me. That's totally true. I don't think a lot of listeners really have know the inside baseball. And I could, as I wear my Red Sox hat and rub it in Carlton's face, that the Red Sox beat the
Braves. We won't talk about that last series with the Braves.
but you know, giving a little bit of inside baseball as to like what's going on right now. So, second week of June, in I think 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 3 weeks is the partisan primary. July 2nd is the partisan primary in Wisconsin. So what's going on? I mean, this is the time where like you kind of get that itch. It's like, oh man, this is campaign season. I miss that, you know, a little bit. What's going on with the campaigns right now? What are they doing?
Well, right now you've seen the Biden administration, or I should say the Biden campaign, got a head start. Being an incumbent president gives you a lot of advantages in terms of the ability to raise money and having the undisputed hold on the resources of your party to get out and raise money and to get people on the ground. And the Biden campaign has done a fairly effective job of getting a whole host. They have over 100 offices and staff going into Wisconsin to organize in the community, to identify voters, knocking on doors, making phone calls, and hosting events to get people involved. The GOP is playing catch up. I think we said it the last time I was on the show. Ever since Scott Walker lost re-election, the state Republican Party has had trouble raising money. I will say that since Trump secured the nomination, and definitely in the wake of the convictions, he has seen a surge in his fundraising. Mm-hmm. How much of that is going to be going to his legal cost versus the party remains to be seen. But he still, I mean, the point is that he has still been able to get some resources in the door, and they are starting to play catch up in terms of getting offices and staff on the ground. And as someone who was a part of that effort 4 years ago, I can say they did a fairly good job, but they're behind the eight ball in the organization part of things. You've also got the Senate campaigns, and I was talking to a friend in Milwaukee just yesterday. Tammy Baldwin and her campaign continues to do a lot of good work in terms of relationship building on the ground. For all of the criticism that can be made of her, whether you agree or disagree with her policy stances, she is probably one of the most underrated candidates in terms of talent and organization that the Democrats have. And Eric Hovde is on a glide path to the Republican nomination. And he is attempting to make inroads, but a lot of his fate will be tied to what happens at the top of the ticket, which as of this morning, just looking at the polls, Wisconsin is going to be like it normally has been in presidential years. It is going to be
bullseye.
breathtakingly close all the way to the very end.
Yep. Yeah. And I think a lot of it, I think a lot of Joe Biden's success will also hinge on Tammy Baldwin, because she's wildly popular. She really is. I mean, there were people that voted for Tammy Baldwin and Donald Trump. You know, it's crazy. And it's not crazy, but I think it's a testament to to her ability to build the bridge and have a pulse on what's going on in Wisconsin. As a state party and some of the, you know, assembly and Senate campaigns, we talked to our dear friend Chris Alfheim last week, and you can catch that on the app here, Civic Media app, and listen to that. It's totally worth it. Chris is wonderful. What are those campaigns doing? Because Carlton Huffman, you would know.
I mean, it's basically been a scramble for especially all members of the Wisconsin Assembly, because thanks to the redistricting case that the state Supreme Court brought down, the whole map has been scrambled. And it means that instead of the guaranteed supermajority dominance that the GOP has enjoyed more or less since 2010 has been upended. And so you're going to see the Democrat caucus make some inroads in a number of places around the state, whereas redistricting and gerrymandering had kept them locked out for a long time. It would take a significant surge and victory at the top of the ticket for the Democrats to be able to take control of the state assembly, but they are definitely going to make gains in that chamber and also in the state Senate. Very unlikely that they would take control of the state Senate based on the fact that only a number of state Senate seats are up at this time. But they are knocking on doors. They are getting nomination signatures and basically doing all the grassroots blocking and tackling and building relationships to do what they need to do for August to be successful in their partisan primary. And then it's the full sprint on to November. But for so many of them, it's going to be a new, much more competitive world, especially for the Republican majority compared to what it has been for almost 2.5 decades now.
Yeah, it really is. We talked a little bit about that with Chris Alfheim, and you know, I think her district in the Valley is the most competitive one in the state of Wisconsin. It'll be wild to see what happens, and exciting at the same time. And just to have some sort of a balance would be good. We got a minute left here, Carlton. What does your summer look like? Are you going to help more people in politics? Are you going to stick with Nancy Mace? What are you going to do?
Basically, take whatever comes my way. I will sit there and say, as someone who has done this for almost a decade and a half, it is nice to be able to have my summer weekends to choose what I want to do on this one.
Whereas, no parades?
Especially in an even number year, a it's a luxury I have not had in a very long time.
Yes.
So taking full advantage of it.
Yeah. No Pulaski polka days or, 4th of July parades handing out candy. Oh, my God. And, driving. I remember driving Brad Schimmel around in our pickup truck and all that. And, oh, gosh, that's crazy stuff.
I will be a participant on the sidelines of these parades and these festivals rather than having to work them, which, I mean, God bless all the people who do put in all the efforts. I mean, it is a sacrifice in time and effort, and you're doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
I just know that for me this time, it's my first time since the 2010 election that I have really gotten to enjoy it and choose what I want to do, but I just encourage everybody, be sure, register to vote, be involved.
Absolutely.
We've got a heck of a fight ahead of us for the next 4.5 months.
Carlton Huffman, dear friend of the show, friend of mine, thank you so much, and this wraps up another episode of The Rational Revolution. See you next week.